We are concluding our Falling Upwards series as we've been exploring topics like doubt and deconstruction and what it means to rebuild our faith. And, you know, the main premise of this sermon series really was that doubt doesn't have to be an enemy of faith. It can actually be a companion to faith, something that helps us grow closer in intimacy and depth with God. But I do feel like for many of us, doubt feels like this endless journey into the unknown, right? Like this perpetual free-falling into a never-ending abyss. And we wonder, will we ever feel the ground beneath our feet again? Like, will life ever make sense the way that it used to when we were so sure of our faith, sure of our reality, sure of what was true and untrue? And although life may never be quite what it was after going through a season of doubt, if I can encourage you with anything today, it is this. There is faith after doubt. There is faith after deconstruction. There is faith after wandering. It might not look like what it used to before, but there is something beautiful on the other side of our doubt if we're willing to stick with it and walk with God. In other words, God is able to take the rubbles of our faith and build something far more beautiful than we could ever possibly imagine. And deconstruction can be a way to pave a way for reconstructing and reimagining a more faithful way of loving God and loving others. And so today, on this last sermon in this collection of teachings, I want to just focus on this one question. How do we begin to rebuild our faith if we've gone through seasons of doubt? And maybe if you haven't gone through seasons of doubt, this might be helpful in the future when you do doubt some things. But how do we begin to rebuild our faith? How do we reconstruct after we've taken brick by brick down of the things that we used to hold true as reality? And so today, I want to offer you three things that we can do in our journey of reconstructing, reimagining, and rebuilding our faith. The first is this. Look behind. Look behind you. No, I'm just kidding. Look behind. Obviously, doubt and deconstruction cause us to look back on our lives and experiences through almost a lens of skepticism, right? We look back on our past experiences. We look back on our past relationships. And some of it makes us question ourselves. Some of it makes us turn our heads. But my question is, what if we could posture ourselves to look back with more nuance, to think back on your history with God, on your journey of faith, remembering the ways that God moved in your life, remembering the moments that marked you, that transformed you, remembering the practices and the communities that shaped you? I don't know if you've heard the saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we say it all the time in church leadership meetings because I think sometimes in our journey through doubt and deconstruction, in our efforts to throw out what's bad, sometimes we also prematurely throw out what's good. What are the parts of your faith that still ring true to you, that still move you and impact you today, that are invaluable in your life? What are the things about God that you still find and hold to be true? Now, honestly, when I look back on my faith, there's certainly a lot I cringe at. I don't know. Have you guys been there? Like, I think of myself 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And the perfect thing that I have an example for on Facebook, Facebook's demonic. I'll tell you why. Because every day, they'll show a memories tab that shows you on this day 5 years ago, on this day 10 years ago, on this day 12 years ago, this is what you posted. And, you know, this year, this is the thing that popped up. And this is me 12 years. Can you be 12 years ago? And this perfectly captures my faith at the time. I'll actually be praying for Tim Tebow today because I know the fruit of his victories aren't the glorification of man. When he wins, God seems to shine. Pray for him today, right? That is a perfect encapsulation of that season of my life. And honestly, it kind of makes you cringe. Take it down, Ying. I don't want to see it anymore. When I look back, there are many, many memories and many, many moments that I'm honestly embarrassed by, that I cringe at. But there are also these powerfully undeniable moments where God proved himself to be true to me. There are these life-changing experiences and practices and relationships that had a profound impact on my life that I don't want to let go of. And maybe if you've been through a journey of doubt or deconstruction, you're tempted just to throw it all away. But my encouragement, my challenge to you today would be to look behind, not just through a lens of skepticism, but also through a lens of remembrance. What are the things that you want to hold on to that are true still today, that are valuable to you in your journey of life? In Joshua 4, you know, we talk about this story all the time, but I think it's particularly resonant in this context. In Joshua 4, after coming out of Egypt, after coming out of 40 years of wandering in the desert, the Israelites finally cross over the Jordan and into the promised land. And this is what Joshua 4, 5 through 7 says. This is the account. This is what Joshua says to his tribes. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So if you know the story, they're crossing the Jordan. This is the last barrier between them and the promised land. 40 years of wandering in the wilderness and then in the desert. And finally, their goal, their end goal is right in front of them. But there's this giant river, this giant body of water before them. And what the Lord instructs them to do is to take the Ark of the Covenant where the presence of God dwelled and to walk across. And as they walked across the Jordan, the seas split open and they were able to dry. The entire people of Israel were able to walk across on dry land. And they say, Joshua says, as you transition from this place to the next, from this season to the next season, pick up these stones and place them down as a reminder of what I did among you when you were in the wilderness. In other words, as they transition from one season to the next, they take a moment to lay down these stones to serve as reminders of what God had done for them, so that even in the next chapter of their story, they never forget what came before. They remember how God had been faithful. They remember the stories of how he moved among them. Listen, there's a lot that they had to leave behind. They left behind their homes. They left behind their belongings. They left behind their former way of life. But there were also things that God called them to take into the next season of their lives. And I want to propose to you that yes, there may be a lot of things that we're leaving behind if we've gone through a journey through doubt. Parts of your faith that used to be unquestionably true, spiritual practices that used to feel impactful that no longer feel useful, maybe even people that were pivotal in your spiritual formation that you no longer feel safe with. But the question is, what are the things that are still worth holding on to? What are the things from your past season that God is calling you to carry into the next? Now, like most kids from Asian immigrant households, I have a lot of trauma with church. I grew up in an Asian immigrant church, and there are amazing things about it, but there are also a lot of things that I hated. And so when I got to college, I vowed I will never return to an Asian immigrant church ever again. There's just some things, if you know, you know. You grew up in the church, there's a lot of shame culture, there's a lot of religion, there's a lot of expectations, there's a lot of fakeness, honestly. But you know what's interesting? While I was so ready to run away from that, the older I'm getting, the more that I'm hungry for a lot of the things that I experienced in my church experience growing up. It's interesting because in my 20s, I absolutely detested the immigrant church. I wanted nothing to do with it. I prayed, Lord, if we ever start a church, don't bring the Asians. But the Lord answered with the Asians. And I really think it was really to heal me, honestly. And interestingly, looking back now through a lens of healing, I'm able to see there are so many beautiful things that this tiny immigrant Korean church had that I still want and long for today. One example is like every Sunday, you know, y'all get lucky if we have like donuts or something or we serve lunch after church. Every Sunday at a Korean church, they serve you lunch. And it's not like they DoorDash it. They're cooking in the kitchen while the service is going on. They're preparing these elaborate meals so that right when service ends, you walk downstairs or you walk into the cafeteria, you smell that food and you're ready to go. I was like, wow, that culture of hospitality is unheard of. Koreans also love to wake up at 5 a.m. on the weekdays for this thing called morning prayer. Come on, Americans don't know nothing about that, okay? 5 a.m., they would come faithfully. And usually it's the Korean moms, honestly, that come and they just spend an hour praying, usually for their kids to find someone to marry or something like that. And it honestly worked for me. Okay, but what am I saying? is that it's easy when we go through seasons of doubt, deconstruction, to just throw it all away, to look back on our history and say, some of that was whack, none of it was true, none of it's relevant today. But I think if we're able to look with the lens not just of skepticism, but of remembrance, we'll find some things that are worth taking into this next season. Even if our faith is expressed differently, I think there are nuggets that God has called us to hold on to. And I hold to this. There's a passage in Galatians 5:6 where Paul is addressing the Galatian church, and he says this, and I love the MSG version. He says, "For in Christ, neither our most conscientious religion nor disregard of religion amounts to anything. What matters is something far more interior, faith expressed in love." What's worth taking from our past into the future? You know, the older I get, I think the simpler some things become, even though some other things get more nuanced and more gray. But one thing becomes really clear, as long as it pertains to faith, is that if it's not about love, it's not worth it. Because at the end of the day, when we see Jesus, he's not going to ask us, how much did you accomplish for my kingdom? How much money did you raise? How many people did you use? What he's going to ask is, did you love? Did you love me well? Did you love the people around you well? And what Paul is saying is, like, all of the religious stuff you do, none of it matters if it's not faith expressed in love. If it's not faith that is defined or felt or experienced as love, it's not worth holding on to. And so as we go from season to season, what do we carry into the next? I think this is a good rubric. We carry those things that expresses itself in love. And that's what's worth taking from behind into the future. And so first and foremost, as we reconstruct and rebuild our faith, look behind. But the second thing I want to encourage us to do is to look ahead. There's this famous passage that the prophet Isaiah says in Isaiah 43:19. You might have heard it out of context. It says, "See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland." It's interesting that the prophet Isaiah, in the middle of making this bold, exciting, prophetic declaration, he like takes a moment to check in with his audience. He says, "See, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up." And he checks in on them. He's like, "Now do you perceive it? Do you not perceive it?" It's almost as if he knows that even though God may be doing all of these new and incredible things all around us, even as life is springing forth and wastelands are turning into streams and gardens, so many of us don't see it. The journey into doubt and deconstruction can feel like looking out at your life and seeing nothing but wastelands and death and rubble. But all of the things we were searching about, they seem to be wasting away. All of the things we knew about God seem to be evaporating. And it not only looks like death, it feels like death. But what if there's actually more that's going on? We have to remember that when Isaiah was making these prophetic declarations, he wasn't declaring this at the height of Israel's success. He wasn't declaring this at the moment of God's breakthrough or victory. Like, that would have made sense. He'd be telling the people, "Look, God is doing this new thing. He's turning wastelands into streams. He's bursting forth." It would make sense if there was something that was happening that would warrant that kind of declaration. But no, this prophetic declaration, when Isaiah makes this statement, it was being made while the Israelites were in the middle of exile. In the middle of Babylonian captivity, taken from their homeland, stripped of their national identity, unsure of what the future held, wondering, "God, where are you at?" Yet in the midst of the uncertainty, in the middle of their wandering, God says, "See, I'm doing a new thing. It springs up. I'm making a way in the wilderness. I'm turning wastelands into streams of life. Do you not perceive it?" Maybe it feels like your faith is dying. But my question is, what if that's not the case? What if what feels like dying is actually God just birthing something new, something different? And that's why I had you ask, where are you finding life right now? Where do you sense joy? Where do you feel hope? What excites you? What energizes you? What if that's the new thing that God is doing in you? Maybe God is calling you to lean into new expressions of faith that look vastly different from what it looked like before. Maybe God is calling you to reimagine what life could look like. I was sharing with my community group this past week. I used to love the Psalms back in the day, but for a completely different reason why I love them now. Back in the day, I loved the Psalms because I would love all those sweeping grand statements of God being our refuge, God being our tower, God pulling through. And I would read those, I would memorize them as encouragements to myself, like, look how awesome God is. And those are no less true today. But what excites me most when I read the Psalms now is kind of a new perspective. I'm actually drawn to the Psalms not because of those grand sweeping statements about God. I'm actually drawn to the Psalms because of the sheer humanity that is expressed in them, of doubt, of worry, of fear, of rage, of anger. And I connect more to the humanity in the Psalms these days than I do to the divine overflow of God's power and presence. And it's a different way of interpreting Scripture. It's a different approach to it. And had I held on to my old ways, I wouldn't have been able to experience this new level of God Emmanuel with us. He understands our human plight. He understands our suffering. He understands what it's like. What are the new ways that God is calling you to express faith? What are the pulses that you can touch upon as he's leading you into this next season? And so look behind, look ahead. And then the last thing is this, look around. You know, I used to hold on to this romanticized expectation that once you find your crew or like your community or your group of friends, like you're together for life. Nothing's going to split you up. But I learned really, you know, I'm 37, turning 38 next year. And I learned that in life, like, I know I'm old, I know. People move. People change. Friends drift apart. People come in your life. People go out of your life. And it's not like your fault. It's not their fault. It just happens. That's life. And if you've been around long enough, you know that's true. But I've come to realize that oftentimes God brings us relationships sometimes for a specific season. And that's okay. Because each of us need different things from community in different seasons. That's not to say we have our besties that are with us through thick and thin, through every season of life. But I'd say the majority of the people that we're around, it changes throughout your life. Case in point, you know, Kristen and I were coming up almost on 10 years of marriage. We got married in 2016. Next year's 2025, like in a month and a half. It's disgusting, right? But we've been married, and when I think back on our wedding, it's interesting. Because at the time, we had 140 guests. And if you'd ask us in 2016, like, your wedding, who you're inviting, like, we'd be like, this is it. Like, everyone at our wedding, like, there are people for life. Like, we're gonna die together. Like, we're gonna do everything together. This is our crew. But what's interesting is, like, if we got married today, like, our wedding would actually look completely different. The core would still be there, like our best groomsmen, you know, our family. There's a core people that would be the same. But there's also a vast change that would actually happen in the people that would attend. I think that's a really good picture, an accurate picture of what life feels like sometimes for many of us, most of us, not all of us, is that people come in and out of our lives. And so every season, there's this invitation from the Holy Spirit to look around. Who are the people that God has placed in your life in this season right now? And what can you draw from them and what can you give to them? You know, I mentioned last week that doubt and deconstruction can often be a lonely experience. And it makes sense because there's this natural disposition of skepticism toward organized religion and the church. And so it makes plugging into a community really, really challenging. But we need people. We need community, especially those who are able to hold you as you wrestle through the tension between faith and doubt. You know, when Krista and I were going through a stretch of doubt and a minor sense of deconstruction as we were planting our church, which is a horrible time to do it, by the way. It's like we were planting a church. We were having this faith existential crisis. What was interesting is like the people that God actually surrounded us with that season. And one of the people that God brought into our lives during that season was one of my mentors. And it's interesting because my previous mentor and this mentor that held us in that season are like night and day difference. Like if they had superpowers, my previous pastor, his power would be like supersonic speed. Like I think Krista said that once and I think it makes perfect sense. Like he's fast. He knows exactly where to go. He's moving at light speed. But what's interesting, if we could give a superpower to the mentor that held us through that transition, we would feel like his superpower would be he knows how to slow down time. Like every time you talk with him, it feels like while the world's rushing ahead, like you're able just to be still and to see things as they are. See it almost in slow motion through a sober-minded lens. And in that season, we needed someone like him to help us slow down. Hey, like you planted a church in San Francisco. It grew really quick. You're moving quick, but slow down. See what it looks like to move at this pace, at the speed of love. And I'm so thankful that in that season, we're able to look around and identify who do we need in this season? Who do we need to surround ourselves with? What relationships do we need to invest in for our spiritual health and for our well-being? And so I want to challenge you, who are the people around you that can hold you, all of you, in this season? Not just the parts that know for certainty what is true and what is right, but even all your questions and doubts and contradictions, who can walk with you exactly as you are, where you can be authentically true to yourself and honest with them. Who are those people around you? And so look behind, look ahead, and look around. And I want to close with a story found in Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, 20 through to 26. This is what it says. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around," right, like a bunch of Groots, okay? Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." I think out of all of Jesus' recorded miracles, like this is one of the most fascinating to me. Because I have a lot of questions when I'm reading this, and I hope you do too if you're paying attention. Like, why did Jesus only partially heal the man's blind eyes the first time he touched him, only to later completely heal him? And then this other thing, like, why did Jesus spit on the man's eyes? There's actually like a viral clip from a pastor, I won't name his name, where he actually brought someone up from his team, and as a sermon illustration, he spit a giant loogie into his hand and rubbed it in the man's eyes. He got canceled real quick. It was very interesting. Don't look it up, okay? It's pretty disgusting. But there's a lot of questions that come up when we read this. Like, why this elaborate process of, like, spitting and, like, only partially healing, only a moment later to fully heal? But I think we could look to the past. In his famous sermon, Men as Trees Walking, there's this Welsh minister and medical doctor named Martin Lloyd-Jones who argues that this account serves as a picture of those who have been touched by faith yet still struggle with faith. And do you resonate with that? Like, you've been touched by faith, but you still struggle with faith, right? The blind man touched by Jesus, he admits that he still doesn't see things rightly. He looks around, and it looks like people are trees. And I wonder if there are those of us who feel like this blind man. We've been touched by faith, but we still have so many doubts. We've had very real experiences with God, but we wonder if it was all in our imagination. We value this thing called church, but in many ways we've lost faith in it. And maybe you look around and wonder why everyone around you, everyone else seems to see things so clearly, but you can't see things right. Everything looks blurry. It seems like everyone else can believe so effortlessly, but for you, it takes everything just to show up to church. What I love about this story is that this blind man's honesty open the way for Jesus to touch him a second time and heal him completely. Dr. Lloyd-Jones, he counsels that if we ever feel stuck between blindness and sight, between belief and doubt, all we need to do is simply be honest with God. Ask him to help us clear our vision. And like this blind man, Jesus will touch you. Maybe for many of us who have been going through seasons of doubt and deconstruction and reconstruction and reimagining, maybe we just need a second touch. Maybe we need Jesus to come and complete the thing that he started. And honestly, I think we'll go through life with blurry vision. I don't think we'll see things completely clear until we reach the end of life. But I do believe that Jesus, he comes and he meets us exactly where we're at. And if we were willing to be honest and authentic about where we're at, the questions we have, the doubts we have, the fact that we don't see some things clearly, he'll come and touch us, that second touch, that third touch, that fourth touch, and he'll continue to clearly heal us, our vision, our sight, and our faith. So I want to invite us into a time of response right now. Why don't we close our eyes? I don't know if any of this story resonated with you, or even if the sermon series resonated with you. I know there's a lot that we covered. I wonder if there are some of us who are experiencing seasons of doubt, who have gone through seasons of deconstruction. Maybe we're right in it right now. Or maybe some of you, like, none of this is relevant for you right now. Like, you're not in doubt. You're not in deconstruction. You're okay. Your relationship with God is great. But for those of you who are finding yourself in this place, I want to invite you just to be honest before God. Just like this blind man, to admit, God, I know you touched me. And now I know maybe on paper I should have everything together. I should have everything figured out. But if I'm being honest, I don't see things clearly. I have questions. I have doubts. I have a bone to pick with you regarding some things. I have issues with the church. I have so many things, offenses and contradictions, so many things in my heart that I'm wrestling with. And I do believe that in response to your honesty, that God will offer another touch. And not just another touch, but as many touches as we need to make it through life. And so if that's you, I want you to just ask right now, God, give me a second touch. Help me see things more clearly. I need your help. Even though I'm in doubt, and even though I'm deconstructing, even though I even doubt you in a way, would you come and help me with my unbelief? I love that there's a passage in Scripture where someone's confession is, help me with my unbelief. And I think sometimes we feel like we need to handle that stuff before we come to God. But I think there's something beautiful about inviting God into that very struggle. God, would you help me with my unbelief? Would you give me that second touch? May I see things as they are? Right now, just take a moment to pray. And whatever it is that you feel like God is challenging you with or putting his finger on, whether it's looking behind, what are the things that you want to carry from your previous season into the next? What's worth holding on to? Or maybe it's looking ahead. What are the new expressions of faith that are bringing life and joy, even if they don't look the way that they used to? Or maybe God's challenging you to look around. Who can I lean into on this journey right now in this season of my life? Who can I be honest with about my questions and my struggles and my doubts? Who can surround me and walk with me? Just take a moment to talk with God.